drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
This is ESPN Chicago, WNVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Good morning and welcome on in to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan with you. Talking all things in the world of golf every single Saturday right here on ESPN Chicago. It has been quite a week in the world of golf. We've got a live event going on. We've got our first team golf and really only team golf event on the PGA Tour at the Zurich Classic. So we will actually head down to talk some Zurich Classic at 9:35 with Lauren Withrow. We'll also talk with Eric Ciotti again this week as the Big Ten Men's Golf Championships are underway and taking place. But let's begin with the RBC Heritage, Mike, because it was a heck of a tournament last week. And my guy that I'm feeling good about for the PGA is a guy who's returning to the place of his first PGA championship. And a guy who's played very well at Quail Hollow in the past, the President's Cup, all that stuff. But Justin Thomas comes away victorious.
Good morning, Tyler, and good morning, Chicago. But I have to give you major props. You called this with 36 holes to go, and this is your guy. So I expect him to be among your picks.
He definitely will
be. As we get into the PGA Championship fantasy, guys, I trail you 0-2 in these two
matches.
You
got to work your way out of it.
I got to get out of this. Yeah. I got three more. I got to go on a heater. But yeah, what an event, though. You know, because without Rory, it felt a little like something was missing, but everyone understood why he wasn't there. But then what went on? I mean, obviously, JT played an incredible first round. He, you know, as we mentioned last week, his 14th time that he has shot 61 or better in his career in a tournament, mind you. So he put on quite a show during the weekend. But, you know, they had that local, Andrew Novak.
Yeah.
And he had kind of Andrew's army running around. He mentioned that he heard his elementary school, his middle school yelled out. He heard nicknames from childhood. So he had his own little cadre of an army Southern style, and the two went head to head. And unfortunately or fortunately, Andrew had a chance to win the thing in regulation on the final hole, but could not close the deal. And you just cannot leave the door open for a guy like JT.
Yeah.
He will take you to the barn, and he did.
Yeah, and it was impressive, too, what Andrew Novak did, because this is an elevated event. And the way that it kind of shaped out down the stretch there, too, I mean, Andrew Novak turns it on Friday and Saturday, goes 65-66. That gets him near the top of the leaderboard, gives himself a chance, and then he matches JT with a 68. On Sunday, and then they get to that playoff. Justin Thomas holds him off, and I just think that, like, the year that JT is kind of having, especially after, I feel like the turning point for him was the. I wonder if we would be where we are right now with Justin Thomas if Zach Johnson leaves him off the Ryder Cup team, because that could have maybe broken his career. And Justin Thomas finally back in the winner's circle. He didn't win at all last year, but he played better golf, clearly better than what he put forth in 2023. And in 2025, he's off to a damn good start, and it would not shock me if he is ultimately the one that wins the PGA.
As far as your comment about last year in the Ryder Cup, I would say it may not have ruined him, but it would have further delayed where we are today, big time. But I guess we have seen, and I think our captain knew, that once you put him in a corner, when he has the world stacked against him and he is, you know, backed into the corner, he plays his best. He responds better than anybody I've seen under pressure. And he's just a guy that thrives on it. He always has. That's why he's the consummate team player.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not ironic that the, you know, as much as I didn't follow it to the degree, but the Atlanta Drive win their team concept. Yeah. Who's on that team? JT. So I think winning is for him a bit of a habit. He's used to it. Mm-hmm. He knows what it's like to be there. Andrew Novak clearly isn't comfortable closing deals yet. But I also think Andrew Novak took a heck of a lot of experience away. He knows he belongs with these big boys. His time will come, but I think Justin Thomas taught him a lesson that will pay dividends for him as his career progresses.
You know what's always funny to me with JT, too, is like, I hate to say this because I feel like it comes with a negative connotation. I feel like it diminishes what the role of him is, but he's just a much more talented version of this in the game of golf, but he's like kind of an instigator. In terms of like you think of those guys or like the enforcer in hockey too, like he's one of those guys, it feels like. And I hate to say that because he's much more talented than like what Andrew Shaw was for the Blackhawks.
Exactly.
But I just feel like he's got, whenever you see him in the Ryder Cup, who's always the chirpiest? Who's always the one, not just talking, but like getting in the face of people? It's always Justin Thomas. And he's got the game to back it up, too. Like sometimes you see some of these guys who don't have the game to back it up, but he does. And that's why it feels like he is due for a much bigger 2025 because he's gotten over that mental hurdle of what 2023 was, where he's just trying to fight to get into the FedEx playoffs at that point. And he finally has gotten back. Last year was a rebuilding year for his confidence. And this year's the year where he takes that next step.
100%. And I would agree with you. And I think the hockey analogy is the best when you, especially if you look at the players that are small on the other team and all they do is use their stick. They know how to just agitate people.
Right.
You know, there was a Kenny Linsman for the Flyers, you know, the one guy on Boston who got traded to Florida just recently. I can't remember his name, but he's another one of those kind of players. But to your point, Justin is a guy that is short in stature, but he plays a game like a giant. And I just love where his head's at now because I think what we saw was a bit of a few things coming together. Life got easy. He wins the PGA. You know, he gets married. He has the child. He decides to go a different direction with his dad as far as his swing coach. And things started to unravel. You know, time on his, you know, or the requirements of his time for the sponsors. And basically he admitted that maybe he wasn't as disciplined in terms of the day-to-day preparation. And I think he just took last year to kind of figure it all out and to take the chaos out of his mind and make things much more simpler, like it was when he was single, without a girlfriend, without a child. Mm-hmm. So I think he has started to find himself. And as I mentioned last week, you know, he comes to that class of, you know, Ricky and Jordan and all the guys, and they have all at that stage of their lives where they're now getting married and they now have their first child and they're trying to balance life as a good father, a good husband, but an excellent tour player and not losing the edge or, you know, their ranking.
Right. Like, it's one thing to like balance your life as a team sport athlete. It's another to balance your life as an individual sport athlete. When you're a team sport player, you don't make the calls when practices, when you're traveling for games and stuff like that. Like you do not control that. You are prisoner to the team, the league, all that. When you're an individual, you're kind of on your own to create your own schedule. Now you may have people that help you create that sort of schedule, but it is very different.
It's really different. And
there's no right or wrong way to necessarily do it either.
No, there isn't. But there is a tremendous amount of self-discipline because to your point, I often make the comparison, you know, like especially at the Corn Ferry level. To me, that's like AAA baseball. And the difference being, though, at the Korn Ferry level, you may not have that army just yet. You might have a guy travel with you, but you're still trying to make money. You're trying to make ends meet. You're trying to just earn a living and, you know, maybe live out of a suitcase, live out of a car. Some of these guys do that. The difference, though, when you're playing for, you know, the Pawtucket Red Sox, and you go 0 for 4 and make three errors, you still get paid.
Yeah.
And you have eight guys in the field with you, backing you up, encouraging you, and then you got a bench full of guys. So you have, from a mental perspective, somebody to talk to relate with, to just get things off your chest. But when you're by yourself as a golfer trying to figure this game out, it's hard enough all on your own. But when you are truly on your own, having to make your own decisions, it's easy to rationalize why, well, I didn't play good today. What practice would make any difference? So you don't. Or, you know, your mind will take you into places until you decide, you know what? I'm going to look in the mirror. That's the problem. Yeah. So now I have to be really disciplined with myself. And that's why the best players are very confident. They're very much about themselves when it comes to this game. And some may consider them to be a bit self-centered, but they have to be, because they're, to your point, there isn't a manager or an offensive coach or the quarterback coach kind of telling you, like, you know,
film breakdown that you got to be present for.
100%. And I mean, you know, you could easily go back to the practice area, or you could just go to the bar. And unfortunately, a lot of guys pick going to the bar, and those are the guys that flame out and don't come back. Guys like Justin Thomas refuse to lose. He has another gear inside his gut that we just don't have. And that's I think, what makes Justin Thomas a special athlete, and one that is perfect for team competitions, Ryder Cup, President's Cup, and heck, even TGL.
All right, when we come back, let's get into a little bit of what's taking place down at the Zurich, and also across the way as well in LIV, in Mexico City, because that's a stacked leaderboard right
unbelievable.
Now.
Unbelievable.
All that and more coming up next. This segment has been brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Alongside Mike Gilligan, I'm Tyler Aki. We're talking all things golf with you. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. We have dueling events right now between the PGA Tour and LIV, and they could both not be more different. The PGA Tour currently going with the partner element of golf. You've got the Zurich Classic. It's the only team element that we've got on the tour. Meanwhile, down in Mexico City, you've got a stacked leaderboard. You've got a top four right now that has combined for seven major wins.
Yep.
If you go to your top four right now in the Zurich Classic, which consists currently of 12 people, not only do you have not a single major win, if you asked the average golf fan to name seven of these guys, I don't even think they could do it.
I'll bet if you ask him, just give him one name and ask him if they're a bowler or a golfer, they wouldn't know. They wouldn't know.
Yeah. I mean the leaderboards could not be more different right now. The big name that everyone, or the big pairing, I should say, everyone was interested in for the Zurich Classic was Rory in his first event since winning the Masters and completing the career Grand Slam, and Shane Lowry. Yep. They are currently tied for 26th right now. They were fantastic in round one, took a step back in round two when the format changed. They'll get back to the round one format today. But right now they are currently tied for 26th, and sitting six strokes off the lead at the moment to Isaiah Celinda and Kevin Velo.
And believe it or not, they were six shots behind them after their amazing day on day one.
Because those guys popped 58. Yeah.
So it's just rather ironic this week when you really take a step back and look at where the PGA is and where LIV is, and we're having a team event. Mm-hmm. They're battling against the PGA Tour, you know, with their own event, and we've got a team event the same week they do. I can't wait to talk to Lauren at the bottom of the hour here, because I want to understand really what's the vibe of these players. Do they really like this, or is this something they feel like they have to do? Mm-hmm. Because to me, when you look at the LIV product right now and the leaderboard that we're getting, to me it's like, well, we have to give reason for the top names to go to this event. And would the PGA Tour ever consider making the Zurich a signature event and then double up the purse and double up the points? Because I think it would be amazing to bring in the top 50 players, and they have to be paired amongst themselves. And whether you do it, one goes with rank number 50, two goes with 49, or do they have literally a draft?
Yeah.
And the number one guy gets to pick who he wants?
Yeah, right now, and you bring up make it a signature event, so it's no cut.
Exactly.
And right now, some of the best players in this event, they didn't make the cut. Like, Colin Morikawa did not make the cut alongside Kurt Kitayama. Matthew Fitzpatrick did not make the cut alongside his brother, and it feels like he almost does his brother a little bit of a service by playing in this thing. Wyndham Clark did not make the cut with Taylor Moore in this. Like, you're seeing probably what? Akshay Bhatia did not make the cut in this thing. Like, you're probably talking about what? Four of the five best players in this event not making the cut?
Yeah.
I guess four of the six best.
Well, yeah.
Because of Rory and Shane.
But if, you know, today being moving day on any tournament, if they go backwards, like, what are you going to watch on Sunday? I mean, does that format appeal to you? Because they're going to be playing alternate shot now on Sunday.
Yeah.
So you're not going to see a birdie fest. You know, no. I mean, you'll see some team get on a hot run. But the fear, I think, with this alternate shot and the way things are going, you could have a team who has a sizable lead going into the back nine, and it's essentially over. Well, and LIV would applaud that.
But best way to see it, too, is, I mean, just look at the team that put up 58 on, and even the Hogarth brothers.
Like 59.
Both of those teams were 11 shots worse when they got to the alternate format.
Yep.
And the alternate shot format.
That's like, exactly
it. It is night and day, and it's part of why today, like, you could see Rory and Shane make their charge up the leaderboard. Like, if they went out and went sub 60 today, would you be surprised? No.
No.
They're the two best players in this tournament right now.
But the problem is, if they're still six shots back, do you really think they can make up six shots in alternate shot?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Because that's a crapshoot.
It is. It really, really is. And... You know, I don't know. I still think they're trying to figure out the details of this event to try to make it as engaging as possible. But as I sat and thought about it, especially as I was watching the LIV product yesterday, because it was on FS2, and I thought I'd just check it out. And little did I know there was going to be a stacked leaderboard. That's why I text you. Which leaderboard would you want to look at? But it was fun to watch these guys play golf up at 8,000 feet. They hit, I think they said there were 13 drives over 400 yards, and they were hitting it in places that it was just hysterical how far the ball was absolutely going. And they did have an issue of trying to control their irons into these greens for obviously the same reason. The air's thin. But it was some fun TV to watch. Now, would I want a steady diet of that? No, I love the PGA Tour. But I think the PGA Tour could do themselves a big favor and really ramp up this particular team concept. And maybe there's just a couple of these kinds of events during the year. And that's it for team when we do get this thing back together again. But to be able to play team, you've got to be of a certain ranking to even be able to play in these team competitions.
Yeah, there's just so many names that you wouldn't even know right now.
Exactly.
And it's not even just the lead, like top to bottom in the event that you just wouldn't even know. Or,
but if you're trying to get me warmed up to the idea that the PGA Tour is going to go to a team concept, then be serious about it. I mean, I want to see Scotty and whoever the heck he wants to play with, or put him with the 50th ranked player and then put number two, or if Rory's now number one, put Scotty's two, he plays with number 49. And you could then have a Thursday, Friday, have a cut, and then you could even then go to match play. Take the top 16 teams, they go 16-8 on Saturday, four, and then they play into the championship on Sunday morning, and then the championship is Sunday afternoon. But that third place finish is going to matter, because it's going to be worth, because the winner should get $8 million, $4 million apiece. Third place is going to pay out pretty nicely, and you're going to want to come ready to play.
I almost think, too, like, the television product of having that final day with just four teams left would be awesome. Think of how many shots you're seeing.
Yes.
The way that you can bounce around is like the perfect pace for, I think, how golf on television could be. I think it would be so much better. Like, I wouldn't even mind if you like did this into like a pro-am style thing. And I'm not saying like, oh, go out and get the influencers and go out and get the, no. How about get Blades Brown in this thing?
Yeah, Blades Brown. How about, I mean, what he did?
We hear a story with Blades Brown once a year at least. And it's been like for 3 or 4 years now about some insane feat that he is putting together on a golf course. He had another this week.
As a teenager. Yeah. In high school.
And it's
unbelievable, this kid.
You get Charlie Woods out there.
I know. It's like, just a matter of time before Blades does something and literally wins, or wins he becomes the youngest winner on the PGA Tour. It would not surprise me in the least.
Yeah, he's going to be like that next up and coming guy. Looking though at Liv and what they're doing in Mexico City, like you brought up the altitude stuff. It reminds me of when I believe it was last year when the PGA Tour. Yeah, it was last year. The BMW Denver. Went to Denver.
Correct.
Yeah,
the international.
And you're hearing Ludwig's hitting 400 with a 3-wood, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
That's
right. And like, that's kind of what you're seeing here. It's fun to watch. But to bring up that leaderboard, right now, Bryson's your leader at 8-under. He's got a couple of majors.
Yep.
Cam Smith and John Rahm, there's three between the two of them. Then you got Bubba Watson. He's got a couple of masters there. That's your top four. That blows away. And speaking of which, tied for sixth right now, Patrick Reed. He's won a Masters before, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you've got major winners, even like the guys who have not won majors that are in the mix in this thing. They're still big names. Tyrrell Hatton, big name.
Yep.
Joaquin Neiman, big name. He hasn't done anything on LIV and has kind of fallen off the face of the earth. But before he made the leap to LIV, he was a very interesting guy, and a guy who I long thought was going to be the next CBS commentator whenever his career was over, Harold Varner.
Yes.
They used to have Harold Varner, when he was done with his rounds, do commentary on the course.
Yeah.
And I thought he was tremendous at it.
I
like, he looked like he would be the guy sitting in the tower next to Jim Nance or whoever succeeds Jim Nance one day. He was that good at it.
And I totally agree with you. And I was shocked when he decided to make that leap to LIV, because to me, when he did that, he basically was also potentially saying goodbye to that potential.
He was throwing away life after golf.
Exactly. Like. No, that's a great point. And that's exactly what it felt like. But he is, first off, one of the most giving and nicest men you will ever come across. He is a big proponent of youth on course. He donated to our section when LIV was here, to the CDGA's youth on course program, $10,000. When LIV came in the first year, just because that's what he wanted to give back to the communities that they were going to. And he does quite a bit in the North Carolina Association.
Yeah.
And so he is a guy that has a big heart, but he's a nice guy, but he's a great competitor too. And so it's good to see him playing some good golf. But as far as I'm concerned, I hope for nothing but great things for Harold Varner. I think he's a class act.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we'll talk more Zurich Classic with Lauren Withrow. She's on the call for ESPN Plus's PGA Tour live coverage. So we will check in with her coming up next. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort. Up North Michigan golf without the drive. Nobody knows the state of Michigan golf better than Lauren Withrow, and she joins us now on the Jersey Mike's hotline. She is on the call for PGA Tour Live. You can catch all of her coverage today on ESPN Plus. She'll be on the marquee and featured groups today. Good morning, Lauren, and thanks for joining us today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. That was quite the introduction. I appreciate that.
Well, Lauren, before we get into this, I have a couple of housekeeping matters to attend to here. First and foremost, friend of the show, Matt McEntee, was just text me, and he said he's so excited to hear that you're on with us today. So he wanted to mention a big hello, and I want to say thank you on behalf of the CDGA for the wonderful article and the piece that you wrote for our February edition of Chicago District Golfer Magazine. It was so well done, so thank you.
I really appreciate that. You're welcome. And I know Matt texted me, too. I know he's tuned in. So we better not mess up here. Pressure's on.
I know. We need to say good things about Troon and all. So anyway, the question I have, because I keep hearing everyone talking about the relaxed atmosphere. What is the vibe like at an event like this when they've come off the Masters and then they play a signature event? But how different is the vibe today or this weekend from a typical signature event or a major in terms of the players' approach?
That's a really great question. I think it varies team to team. For some of the players in the field this week, this is the only team event on the PGA Tour, except, of course, when you get into things like the Ryder Cup, which we can get into a bit later. But some of the teams come in here, they're looking to rack up some points. This event has some of the most first time winners on the PGA Tour. But you also get teams like Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy, who last year, when McIlroy was in a bit of a slump, he and Shane Lowry teamed up, and this event gave them an opportunity to have some fun, to enjoy the camaraderie, to enjoy the friendship they had. And that really shined through, and of course, they came out to win. So for different players, this event does a little bit of anything, right? It can be a more relaxed atmosphere for players who are looking to get into a groove, to have some fun, to remember why they love playing on this game, especially if they haven't been in the winner's circle as of late. But it's also a great opportunity for younger players to come out and possibly rack up some much-needed FedEx Cup points. I mean, you have a group like the team of Michael Thorbjornsson and Carl Phillips. They're the youngest team in the field, both just 23 years old, played together at Stanford. You have Nikolaj and Rasmus Højgaard, who teamed up, the twin brothers from Denmark. So you get a little bit of everything out here, and I think that's what makes this event so much fun to watch and so special, especially as we get into the weekend and as we get into that alternate shot format like we saw yesterday and we'll see again on Sunday.
Yes, we've got the best ball format today, alternate shot tomorrow, like you mentioned there, Lauren. How do you feel about team golf as a whole? Like, do you like that it's just kind of a one-and-done thing on the PGA Tour, or would you like to see more of this?
I think it's well-paced having this event right in the middle of the season. It's between a couple majors and a couple signature events because every other year we are getting events like the Ryder Cup or we're getting the Olympics and all these things sprinkled in. And the timing of this event this year especially, I mean, you better bet the Ryder Cup captains are keeping an eye on how things play out here. There's nearly a dozen teams of international players who have teamed up with one another. You see a lot of repeat pairings of players who have played together in the Olympics. So I think it's a really good balance. You know, when you're playing this unique format, I think that players don't want to spend too much time in it. They want to get back to regular stroke play eventually, especially if they are gearing up to play in the next major in a couple of weeks out at the PGA Championship. But I think the way that it's paced right here in the middle of the season is a really good mix up for these guys.
So Lauren, Tyler and I, we were chatting about all of the big names that didn't make the cut, unfortunately, but obviously Rory and Shane are probably the fan favorite. But aside from those two, who becomes the team that either can push them or the fan favorite aside from Rory and Shane?
I think that the top of the leaderboard is really exciting right now. The four teams that came into today after the 36-hole cut could all be first-time winners on the PGA Tour, and there's a lot of talented players in that group. But I would go back to the Højgaard twins, Nikolaj and Rasmus. They both were really successful out on the DP World Tour. They have had an insane first couple of rounds. They started on the back nine in their first round with the best ball format a couple days ago on Thursday and made like 10 back-to-back birdies, including an eagle. I mean, they went on a tear. So I'd be excited to see what the Højgaard twins are able to do out there in that format again today. I don't think the scores are going to be quite as low. It was ball in hand on Thursday. That's not the case today. But that team of brothers, I mean, kind of has it all. They have winning experience out on the DP World Tour. They played in this event last year as well, had a pretty solid finish. They were top 15, and they have team experience together. They are teaming up in the Olympics and beyond that have just grown up playing golf together. So I think that that sort of relationship is really unique and comes out down the stretch, especially when we get back to that alternate shot format tomorrow. So I keep an eye on the Højgaard brothers, and what an exciting win that could be for them.
Lauren Withrow, our guest here on the Jersey Mike's Hotline. Jersey Mike's, a sub above. Lauren on the call for PGA Tour Live today. She'll be on the featured and marquee group, so you can check that out throughout the day. Lauren, as you look at how some of these pairings come to be as well, we had Nick Hardy on the show who won this event a couple years ago. With Davis Riley, and he was saying how, like, yeah, it was kind of last minute. We just kind of paired up, and then we went out and won the thing. Is there, like, an interesting story of how some of these pairings, maybe especially some of the guys at the top, came to be?
Well, I think you have the natural pairings. Like, there were three sets of brothers. Like I mentioned, the Højgaards. You also had the Fitzpatricks and Jeremy and Paul Janik in the field. The former two I just mentioned didn't make the cut. You've got the brother pairings. I mean, Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy decided to pair up after having a few pints after the Ryder Cup a couple years ago, and that's how they decided to get out here. And
that's how a lot of great duos are formed. That was a fun story.
You know, they didn't make the cut, but Taylor Moore and Wyndham Clark had a really interesting story. Taylor Moore's caddy actually subbed in for Wyndham Clark's caddy back at Arnold Palmer's place at API, and it was actually Moore's caddy who asked out Clark and said we should all team up because Moore and Clark are good friends and their caddies are good friends as well. So that was kind of how that match came to be, and those guys not playing the weekend, but, you know, one of the more fun stories. And then I'm not sure if this is actually how the match came to be because it was so recent, but you have a team like Sahith Theegala and Aaron Rye who are teaming up for the first time this year. It's Theegala's fourth appearance in this event with as many partners. But Rye and Theegala played together for the first time in the final round of the Masters this year. So you kind of see a little bit of everything, and it's been a lot of fun to watch the team dynamics grow throughout the weekend as well, especially for some of those guys who are teaming up for the first time. And then, I mean, you've got David Lipsky and Dylan Wu, who teamed up. They played together at Northwestern. Shout out Wildcats. And I mentioned them earlier, but Carl Phillips and Michael Thorbjornsson, teammates back at Stanford. So quite a few ways that these matches have come to be this week in New Orleans.
Well, leave it to a couple of Irishmen to figure out life over a pint, you know, and it led to some great things. But for those that like to put a couple of dollars on the event today, and knowing that today is better ball and tomorrow's alternate shot, in your opinion, who might be the dark horse out of all of this? The one that comes out of nowhere that we haven't thought about? I mean, obviously the Shane and Rory pairing is there. The Højgaards are definitely a fan favorite. But who might be that one team that you want to watch out for?
You know, Andrew Novak and Ben Griffin, that's a really fun team. In their first round, they just had one bogey on the card in that best ball format. And then yesterday, they handled alternate shot really, really well. Again, just one bogey on the card. They were 6 under. That was one of the best scores we saw posted in that format, which is definitely the more challenging of the two. So that balanced, you know, first to second round in such a challenging format, posting a 62 Thursday, then a 66 yesterday. I think Andrew Novak and Ben Griffin could be doing something special this weekend.
All right, before we let you go, Lauren, you got a lot of things going on. Mike mentioned the story you wrote in the Chicago District Golfer magazine a couple months ago, about the Chicago Golf Gals. Can you tell us a little bit about that story, how it came to be, and what they're all about?
Oh, my gosh. The Chicago Golf Gals are such a special group. Rosa Mora started everything out there. She is actually... was in the military, had a professional career. She's got an incredible story. She's only 28 years old right now and really picked up golf as an outlet for a stressful work life and fell in love with the game, found like she didn't really have many women to play alongside with. So she started the Chicago Golf Gals Instagram page and it's just taken off. They have so many events from golf clinics with partnerships with both indoor and outdoor clubs. I mean, you mentioned Matt McEntee earlier. He's been a huge supporter of them, getting them set up with Troom facilities. But it's really blossomed into an amazing community for women golfers of all ages, all backgrounds, and all experience levels in Chicago. So for anybody who's interested in the game or looking for other women to play with who are local anywhere around Chicagoland, they definitely should go check out the Chicago Golf Gals and also read the story and read a little bit about Ro because she's such a special and dedicated person that's really going to facilitate some awesome change for women in the sport.
And then you've also got a new television show coming out as well on the Golf Channel. The Drop is beginning in May. What can viewers get out of that and where at what time and days can they watch that show?
Oh my gosh, it's going to be such an exciting show. We're launching on May 5th at 7 o'clock Eastern, so 6 o'clock Central on the Golf Channel. It'll re-air four times throughout the week, so definitely set your TV to record the show. But we're going to be filming out of our brand new PGA studios here in Pontevedra Beach, and you're going to get a little bit of everything. We're going to have players in the studios for some exclusive interviews. We're going to be doing recaps of the previous tournament, previews of the upcoming tournament, and I'm hosting the first couple episodes with Matt Every, who is such a character, former PGA Tour player. He's a lot of fun, and we're so excited working through, you know, what we're going to cover in that first episode, and it's just going to be a new weekly look inside the PGA Tour studio. I think it's something that the tour desperately needs and wants and is excited for to humanize these players and to give a really interesting look at some of the behind-the-scenes things that are going on all across the tour. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you're tuning in May 5th at 6 o'clock Central on the Golf Channel.
Must-see TV.
Yeah. We'll
look forward to it.
We'll be watching from French Lick.
100%. You know what? Yeah, we will.
Mm-hmm.
Monday night.
Hey, I don't know where I'd rather be. Don't tell me that.
We'll have a watch party just for you.
There you go. There you go.
Hey,
with our
I appreciate
from Jersey
that, you
Mike's
guys.
And everybody else that's going to be with us.
Yep. So. Cannot wait. Lauren, thanks so much for the time. Have a
Thank
great
you,
call.
Lauren.
And we'll be watching.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Lauren Withrow. She'll be on the call for PGA Tour Live for the final two rounds of the Zurich. You can find her on the featured and the marquee groups of the tournament. All right, when we come back, the golf world did lose a legend recently. We'll discuss all of that and more. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Segment brought to you by Tour Edge. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan. If you missed anything from the show, including our conversation with Lauren Withrow, you can find it on the CDGA Golf Show podcast on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcasts. Earlier this week, the golf world, exactly a week ago today,
yeah,
actually.
It was right after our show.
The golf world did lose a legend, one of the greatest amateur golfers ever, Robert J. Siegel. Passed away, and he had a illustrious career on the amateur tour, did go to the Champions Tour as well, and did play in some majors, but the golf world lost him at the age of 81 last week.
They sure did, and for those who are old enough to remember Jay Siegel like myself, unfortunately, you weren't even born when he was winning U.S. amateurs, mid-amateurs, one of the most decorated amateur players and nicest guys in the game ever. And Jay played, believe it or not, in 11 Masters as an amateur and was the top amateur three times. So what was funny, Jay played golf at Wake Forest, was going to head to the PGA Tour, but had a freak accident with his fraternity brothers that involved an automobile with his hand going through the windshield or one of the car passenger windows. And he took 72 stitches in his right hand, and it curtailed his professional career. But Jay later tells us that was the best thing that ever happened to him because it forced him to go on into the business world and open up arguably one of the best insurance businesses in the country. As diligent as he was as a golfer, he was as savvy as a business guy. So his nickname became Mr. Amateur because he didn't turn professional until the ripe old age of 50.
Yeah.
So he went ahead and won 20 times professionally, 8 times on the Champions Tour. And again, one of the most decorated amateur golfers that we will ever see in our life.
Yeah.
And fortunately, this guy had an opportunity to meet Jay when I first graduated from Miami of Ohio. And I was the assistant golf professional at Butterfield Country Club. And Butterfield puts together what they call the Butterfield Invitational every year. And it brings in the top amateur players from all over the country and all over the world. Every July, they have one of the biggest amateur tournaments going. And so that year that I was there, Jay Siegel teamed up with Robbie Hoffman of Hoffman Meats, who they supply all the beef to McDonald's. So they came on out, and they were a formidable pair. And the first round, or the first day, was a practice round. And I was in the shop, and Jay walks in, and he has this weird look on his face, but he's holding a golf shaft in one hand and his persimmon head driver in the other hand. They aren't connected, and he's at a loss as to what do I do? Are you able? So I take a look at it, and the thing snapped off in the shaft. So the shaft was still in the hosel.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So it's like, how are we going to get this out? This is going to take a true professional to do this. But like everybody in Chicago, I got a guy. And I said to him, if you trust me, I've got the best club manufacturer and designer and repair guy in Chicago. He does all the private clubs, including this one. Paul Lemke, the head pro, came around the corner and goes, Jay, you're in good hands with this. And so he said, go ahead. But he gave me his specifics. He had to have it tipped a quarter of an inch, and it was an X100, and it had to have 3 wraps, and it had... So I go out to my good friend, David Glad, who had just started his company in his garage. And it was like meatball surgery. We went to work on this driver. Dave cleaned it up, made it, and I presented it back to him the next morning. And after about 20 minutes on the range, he came back to me and he said, it's better than it was. So we ended up creating a bit of a weekend friendship. And he started asking me about, you know, what are you going to do in life? And I said, well, I just graduated Miami, you know, you know, I'm young and dumb, so I'm thinking PGA Tour. But he said, you know what? It's not so bad joining one of these places and still playing a lot of golf.
Yeah.
And that has always resonated with me. And I still think about it today. But Jay Siegel was a guy to really look up to, and he made a lasting impression on me. And I just think the world of him, and golf lost a great man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at his Wikipedia right now, and like all of his amateur wins and then his champions, it's a Roman scroll.
Yeah.
Like the guy has won at an immaculate level for a guy that, he never played on the PGA Tour. He played in the majors, right, like you said, but and then he played on the senior tour too. But it's pretty incredible, like the career that you can put together without actually being on the tour.
The most amazing part about this is you watch the U.S. amateurs. You're always seeing the top collegiate kids, guys that are 21 and 20 and whatnot. Jay Siegel graduated in the 60s from Wake Forest. He didn't win his first USAM until 1982, I believe, or 83, when he went back to
82,
back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he wins again. So he was the only amateur to have won the mid-am, which is people 25 years and older, and the USAM in the same year. I don't think we will ever see that happen again because the players are just so great.
I was just going to say, especially with the influx of golf now, we'll never see a player like this probably ever again.
Never.
Because like you said, a lot of this now is all collegiate guys.
100%.
And you're not going to see someone like this probably ever again.
Never again. And, you know, it's nice company when they say as good or as better than maybe Bobby Jones. Those are the two greatest amateurs that we will ever see. And I don't think we'll ever see another one like it.
Yep. All right, when we come back, we will be joined by Eric Ciotti, preview the Big Ten championships that are taking place right now. And we'll also pick his brain on some other stuff in the world of professional golf, including who could be the next to win the Career Slam. All that and more coming up next. This segment brought to you by Tour Edge.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.